Good evening. I'm Graham. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Graham.
And I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. For those that would care to join us, let us open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Remember, the person next to you might be listening. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. And I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So we're getting near the end of the steps again, and the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening we're going to discuss the first part of step 12, and really let me read step 12 before we start with the readings. So step 12 says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics. That's the bit we're going to focus on tonight, trying to carry this message to alcoholics. And the other part of the step is, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So we've got Ryan, and once again, the home group has spared no expense, and we've brought in a guest speaker all the way from Gloucester. So not Gloucester, England, but Gloucester, Virginia. And he's here with us tonight, and we're tremendously excited. So anyway, so we're going to start off, and I think, you know, this is definitely two of my favourite paragraphs in the whole book, so I'm excited to read them, and they're on page 89. So we're going to start off, and it's chapter 7, and it's page 89, and we're just going to kick off where it says practical experience on page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people to recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lights. Ryan?
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. This is a big deal for me. When I first got to AA, I really did not appreciate the significance of this idea of working with others. As a matter of fact, I was a gal that for the first about 10 months, I wasn't particularly good at staying sober. I had absolutely no problem with like cracking open a couple of beers, you know, 30 minutes to an hour before a meeting. And that first step really confounded me. And I remember going into a meeting one night and they're talking about the 12th step and it absolutely enraged me. And I remember this first guy, he gets done sharing and I like raise my hand and I'm like, you know, we don't need to talk about this. Can we talk about the first step? Because if I'm powerless over alcohol, how on earth am I supposed to quit drinking? And I was quite upset. And what I didn't understand then was that they were telling me how to quit drinking. That this idea of putting the needs of other people ahead of my own was what would keep me sober. And this working with other alcoholics, this idea is so incredibly important that they actually start talking about it in the forewords to the big book. What it says is that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to permanent recovery. And so if you want temporary recovery, you can just ignore everything that we say tonight. And I found that to be true. I don't know if anybody else does this, but I watch Alcoholics Anonymous, and I watch what happens to the people of it. And what happens is every year I see a whole bunch of people come in. I see people pick up one-year chips, two-year chips. But what happens is that as it goes on through the years, I see fewer and fewer people picking up those 20-year chips and those 30-year chips. And I watch those folks with the 20-year chips and 30-year chips. And what I've noticed is that most of them are talking about working with another alcoholic, you know, so it's that important for me to do it if I want to stay sober. And I love what Bill Wilson says in his story about it. He says that he was plagued, absolutely plagued, by waves of resentment and self-pity that sometimes nearly drove him to drink. But he soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. And that has absolutely been my experience. I cannot tell you how many times I have gone through the day and I'm just feeling jacked up and out of whack and I don't even know what the heck is going on. You know, my mind's a million miles a minute and I'm absolutely inconsolable. And it seems like no matter how many people I talk to, that feeling just doesn't go away. It doesn't seem to matter how many prayers that I say, it's still there, it's just on. But I show up at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I start talking about alcoholism in the 12 steps, and then I look around for that newcomer and I stay late and I talk to that person, and all of a sudden, like, everything's back on track. You know, the circumstances of my life don't change, but all of a sudden everything's okay and I can handle life and I can face it. And when I talk about working with others, I'm not talking about getting a position in a committee. I'm not talking about a service commitment to a home group. I'm not even talking about what I say in a meeting or giving folks rides. I mean, those are all really great things to do, and I do it all the time. What I'm talking about is taking time out of my personal life to talk to another human being about the steps. And it has been an amazing experience. It's given me a purpose in life. A lot of times I wander around my regular life kind of like, why am I even doing this? Who cares about this job? This is meaningless and pointless work, blah, 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 blah. But I can always find real meaning in here in AA, you know, helping somebody else get sober. You know, that it's hugely important. I cannot imagine where I would be if someone had not taken the time to tell me about this stuff. Well, actually, I can. I can't imagine. I would probably be dead because I was like a suicidal kind of drunk, and that's where I was headed. You know, take a moment to sit back and reflect. Where would you be if someone hadn't taken the time to do that for you? You know, and a lot of people will love to talk about it. They have all these great intentions. They'll talk about it. They'll read about it. They'll think about it. But when it comes time to actually show up and do it, they don't. I was in a meeting just last week for an hour. A bunch of people sat around and they talked about how grateful they were to be sober and to be at a meeting. And at the end of the meeting, they said, is anybody willing to be a sponsor? And out of that room of 20 people talking about how grateful they were, there was a handful of us raising our hand, you know? And people die because of it. It's sad. It's very sad. I'm very passionate about this. Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
I'm Larry. I'm an alcoholic.
Larry.
I want to thank Graham and everybody else who's interested in having me come here and speak on anything. Just the fact that you're all willing to listen to me for a few minutes is amazing. And hopefully you'll still feel that way when I get done. I'd love to say I had this wonderful prepared speech to give you that was going to impress you, but I don't. So I'm just going to try to speak from my heart. And, you know, I some of the things Ryan shared in the beginning really touched with me. I spent several years in this program before I ever really thought it was important that I help somebody else. I mean, I had been removed from alcohol for a couple of years, and I would go up and say hi to people and pass my phone number out, but consciously taking time out of my schedule, consciously maybe inconveniencing myself for the good of someone else. Today, I don't see it as an inconvenience, but in the beginning, it felt that way. You know, I didn't do that at first, and my program definitely suffered. My spiritual condition suffered. There's a part in Bill's story where he talks about the way he enlarges his spiritual program is through help and self-sacrifice for others. You know, when I first got here, I thought the way I was going to enlarge my spiritual program was to be able to meditate in the lotus position for an hour and a half, or to say some real fancy, fruitful, flowery prayers. You know, if I can learn these really intricate prayers, that'll get me in good with the higher power. And really, it's about, you know, deflating my own self-importance. And one of the best ways to do that is to inflate the importance of my fellow suffering alcoholic and the people around me. And to be able to, when I finally got the opportunity, I remember I had lots of people come up and ask me to sponsor them at first and be able to talk to them about Alcoholics Anonymous. But it was a while yet before someone really got serious, you know, really wanted to sit down and read through this first 164 pages with me. But when that moment happened for me the first time, I was only then I felt a full-fledged member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was in that moment when I felt that something, I don't know, I don't want to cheapen it and say it was something magic, but I don't know how else to describe it. But that thing that happens when one alcoholic sits across from another and shares from the heart, shares how they're really feeling, drops all the masks and all the walls and all the fronts and all the things that we want you, as my sponsor says, there's a way I want the world to see me, and then there's the way I really am. You know, when I drop all that and I'm able to speak honestly, there's something powerful that happens in that moment. There's been times when I've been reading through Bill's story with a newcomer, and I'm reading that part where Bill gets visited by Ebby Thatcher, and Ebby comes to him with the message of recovery and contact with a higher power. And I think, man, we're still doing it. Here we are, 78 plus years later. And that's still that same basic, simple act of me worrying more about someone else than myself, me carrying the message to another person in hopes that they may actually hear it and get sober like myself. And I don't want to, you know, sound over emotional about it, but it really is. It is a huge gift, and it's been a very powerful experience for me. It's funny, there are times now I sponsor a lot of guys, and I've taken a lot of people through the steps at this point in my recovery, and there's times when I think, oh, I'm going to read Bill's story again. You know, and when I'm honest with myself, sometimes I feel that way. You know, I've read Bill's story 150 times. And then when I sit down and I'm beginning to share my experience and my interaction with Bill's story with another alcoholic, and watch some of the lights begin to come on and connections being made, and then hear that alcoholic open up to me and begin to share some of their story, it's like, whew, I'm getting another gift, an opportunity to read Bill's story. It gives me a whole new attitude. So it's just like Ryan sharing, you know, Bill talked about being saddled with deep depression and having a hard time. He talks about returning to his old hospital, his old rehab, in total despair, but feeling lifted up the moment that he left after talking to another alcoholic. And that has been my experience time and time again. I sponsor an inmate in a local jail, and there's times when I don't feel like driving the half hour and going through all the process to actually get in the jail and sit down with him. But 5 minutes into it, I am so, it's like I can do nothing but feel gratitude for my higher power for putting me in that position to be able to do that. Just to be a message carrier, you know, just to, not because I'm special, not because I'm smart, not because I've got this thing, but because I've opened myself up and become willing to be used by the program and my higher power. And that's the greatest gift I've received in recovery, the greatest gift. So I think that's all I got to share on that. Thanks.
Thanks, Lottie. Now we're going to go on to page 91 with the sentence that begins, "See your man alone if possible." So that's over there on page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking, habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I ignored a large portion of this working with others for a little while, and it's given me a great appreciation for how it's done here. I was so excited about like the 12 steps and stuff that I was just like going up to people like, you have to do the steps right now. And there was none of this general conversation or like, let's relate for a little while. And what usually happened is they'll like nod at me and they probably thought I was some crazy fanatic and I generally never heard from them again. And so I kind of came back to this and I've started to do what it says in this book. And it's very simple, you know, talk. I always like to start by talking, you know, the general BS, you know, how's your day, what you doing, yada, yada, yada. And then turn the phase to some phase of drinking. That's really easy to start talking about alcoholism, and it usually goes something like, what brings you here tonight? It's a great lead-in to start talking about alcoholism. And it is important to kind of get a feel for where someone's at. So that I know the stories that I need to tell. You know, not everybody's going to be able to relate to, like, me sitting on my couch watching Intervention getting drunk. You know, there's some bar drinkers out there. So maybe I should tell a different story. You know, if they're in a light mood, I will definitely go for the horse or for the funny stuff. But if you're all depressive, then yes, we can like commiserate together on like the horribleness of alcoholism and like how we want to die. And it's really important to kind of get an idea of, you know, where they're at with spirituality and things like that, you know, because some people are very open to the whole God thing and other people are very closed-minded to it. They don't like it. They don't want anything to do with it. And I kind of need to get a feeling for where they're at with that so I know how to talk about it. You know, how I talk to the person who's okay with God versus how I talk to the person who's not okay with God are going to be two very different things. So this is just kind of the lead-in.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan. You know, I think that I remember when I earnestly began to try to carry the message, when I had the spiritual awakening and I came across probably like an evangelical preacher, you know, I quickly wanted to grab the newcomer, like you said, and hey, we got to do this. And let me tell you how we're going to do it. We're going to sit down and we're going to read this stuff. And when it says pray, we're going to pray. When it says write, we're going to write. And you know, I think it was good for me to have that enthusiasm early on, but also, too, and probably, you know, no wonder why guys would avoid me and the next time they saw me in a meeting. You know, it's like, whoa, watch out for that guy. You know, I was, I touched briefly on the higher power. I was one of the ones that went from being hardcore atheist to, you know, reborn again, and the light of God is now on me. You know, I went from one extreme to the next, like any typical alcoholic, you know. So I, the thing that I've learned through a lot of failures and mistakes is when I'm beginning to talk to that guy that's new and coming in the room is to listen, is to really listen and to show some attention for what's going on in that person's life. Because if I can't at least act interested in what's happening with that new alcoholic, he is definitely not going to be interested with what I have to say. I find many of them are more willing to listen to me, give them some guidance and some direction in the step work if I first listen to them and maybe not necessarily sympathize, but empathize, feel for their situation and be able to relate to it and share my own stories about, oh yeah, you know, I got in trouble with the wife too, and oh yeah, I've lost jobs, and oh yeah, went unemployed for extended periods of time because I couldn't get out of bed by noon every day. You know, all these things that we suffer as alcoholics. So I found it crucial for me to learn to be a good listener, you know, to learn to be a good listener. And there are times definitely as I get farther down the road with the sponsee that I think, okay, I need to curb some of the crazy talk because we're all over the place as alcoholics. But in that beginning, I want to set up some type of rapport with this person that they feel they can trust me, that they can tell me, hey, I have a problem with the God thing. I don't believe in God. Sorry. That's the way I was when I got here. Or, you know what, I really don't want to have to go to 4 or 5 meetings a week. I don't want to have to do 1 a month. You know, that's cool. Be honest with me. Tell me where you're at. How are you feeling? Because then I can gauge my interaction with them on where they're at, just like Ryan shared. So I think for me, this part really speaks to the idea that I need to listen and I need to get that person to relate as an alcoholic one to another.
Thank you. We're going to continue on page 91 with When He Sees You Know, on page 91. When He Sees You Know All About the Drinking Game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is an alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him, from your own experience, how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that he possibly can, if he's not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
Yeah. This is really just kind of going through the first step with somebody. And what's amazing is you don't actually have to have a big book in order to do it. And I used to really kind of be like the big book thumper, and that's how I would lead in. Like, here's the big book, and like, let's start reading passages together. But you can kind of talk your way through it. And I've done a lot of big book study, and it's incredibly helpful when trying to talk to someone about alcoholism, because I can talk to you about the phenomenon of craving. I can talk to you about the mental obsession. And I know from going through that and studying that from my own experience what that looks like in real life. I found a lot of times one of the greatest gifts we can give another person is to put like these alcoholism terms into real life, like the phenomenon of craving. Like, what the heck is that? That's like this really weird phrase, you know. But usually when I start talking to people about, I always wanted more, you know, no matter how much I got, it always seemed like a good idea. All of a sudden they understand the allergy. You know, or when I talk about forgetting that it was a bad idea to drink, you know, all of a sudden we know about the curious mental blank spot. It's funny because an alcoholic, just like as it says, it's going to understand me at once. You know, I hear sometimes in meetings, like, I had to have somebody read it to me line by line and explain it to me. If you're a real alcoholic, you're probably going to get me within a couple of sentences. That's just the way it works. Other people don't get it. Anyhow, and if you're satisfied as a real alcoholic, you know, that's something I took a little while to appreciate. I kind of just assumed that if you were in an AA meeting, you were definitely 100% an alcoholic, and that has not been my experience. And I can give you 2 examples. Remember one time we were sitting around, and I was just, this was I wasn't sponsoring this person, but somebody I knew was. And we're sitting around, and this guy's new, and he's just gotten out of a treatment facility. And we're sitting there talking, and I'm kind of scratching my head, like, you don't really sound too much like an alcoholic. And he's talking about how he was just drinking a lot to fit in with other people, and that he's made changes in his life. Like, he's, like, gotten involved with the band and all this other stuff, and, you know, and he's just feeling great, and life is going good. And I'm just like, well, you know, I don't know. You have to kind of decide for yourself, but you might not need to be here, you know? And so, you know, why waste an entire lifetime in AA if you don't need to be here? I don't know. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. The other thing is addicts. We get a lot of addicts in these meetings. And I'll tell you my experience with this one gal. She came to me. She had been in AA for a while. So I just assumed she's an alcoholic. And over the period of working with her, she wasn't getting sober. She was relapsing, but she was not relapsing on alcohol. It was always usually like morphine or drugs or IV, you know, all kinds of stuff. And after a while, I realized, you know, she's probably not an alcoholic. And so once again, I had to sit down with her one day and say, you know, you can stay in AA if you want. You're certainly welcome to be here, but I think maybe you should be happy. You might want to go to a few NA meetings. And she ignored me for a while. What happened was she ended up completely wrecking her life, and she was in a treatment facility, and she heard another addict talk. And when I talked to that gal later on, what she said to me is, that girl was telling my story. She's been sober in NA for over a year now. You know, it's so important. Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to help everybody, but I just can't. You know, we're here for the alcoholic. And it's really dangerous for a non-alcoholic to try to help an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why. My first sponsor, I mean, I can't really say, but I'm pretty sure that she wasn't an alcoholic, because she sat down to talk to me about her drinking. And I was, like, really confused by her drinking, because she talked about how she had to have one shot of vodka a day. And I just remember thinking, you know, if I could have kept it to one shot of vodka a day, I wouldn't have come here. My life would be, like, absolutely perfect. And later on, when I got sober, I can tell you she was not the person that I was calling. I was calling the lady who was talking about drinking way too much and doing stupid stuff and all kinds of crazy stuff. I was like, please help me make it stop, you know? There's something very special about one alcoholic talking with another. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, at this point, I think it's appropriate for me to share a lot of my experience of being an alcoholic, you know, and I like to tell the full story. You know, there was a time when I was 14 or 15 that drinking was a lot of fun and very few consequences. And then as the years went by, the fun got less and the consequences got larger. Until the point, like all of us, I think, get here, life becomes too painful and unmanageable to stand it anymore. And I'm either going to kill myself or kill somebody. And, you know, so I share that, and I share that also with the idea that, you know, I always make sure to tell the newcomer, you may not drink exactly like I did. You may not feel exactly like I did, but there still should be some similarities there. And I agree with Ryan in that, you know, within a few minutes, that person's going to start to bite on what you're chewing on, because we just relate. You know, I didn't take me long to realize that I belong. I think it was like two meetings. Even though I wasn't sure if I wanted to do this thing, I knew I was around people that thought like I did, felt like I did, and drank like I did, you know. And so I think that that process doesn't take too long if your prospect's definitely alcoholic. And I agree with the idea that you can't, you know, I spent some time. I've made so many mistakes in AA, and you know, I think about the times in early recovery where I would get a newcomer that would talk about some bad escapades with drinking, and then I would work really hard to convince them that they were alcoholics, you know, because I wanted them to have what I had. It was like, well, see, if you just admit you're alcoholic and you come in and do this thing, your life's going to get so great you can't imagine. And that's just not good for me to do. That's not healthy. That person has to come to their own conclusion, even if it does seem obvious to me that they're alcoholic from what they've shared. I again go back to this idea that something happens if I open up my heart to this person and share with them honestly. And there are many times, you know, that I still will talk to a newcomer and may not see them again for months, sometimes even years. But if they're truly alcoholic, they always come back. And if I haven't been overly preachy or judgmental or, you got to do this, you know, if I've had an open heart and approached them in a loving way, sometimes that person will come right up to me when they come back and go, hey, you were here when I came before. You talked to me, and I don't even remember who they were. But, you know, you shared some good stuff. Did I? Wow, that's great. That's good to hear. You know. But it's a chance to carry the message again, and maybe a seed gets planted the first few times they come in. You know, that was told to me when I got here. Sometimes seeds get planted, and it takes a while for them to germinate and grow. And so I think that really is my job, is to carry the message, to plant those seeds, and to say, hey, if you suffer from the same problem I do, if you feel this way, if you think this way, if you drink this way, guess what? There is a solution, and I'm here to share it with you if you're willing. You know, and I think approached in that way, people feel more open to hearing the message and more willing to give it a try than if I come across, which I have before, we're going to read this book, we're going to do the, you know, that just, that didn't work for me, and it shouldn't work for anybody else.
Thank you. We're going to continue on page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism on page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story, unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism, because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are.
Yeah, I love to talk about the hopelessness of alcoholism. This may sound cruel, but like when I'm talking to a newcomer, I'm perfectly happy to make you feel worse. I do not offer folks any hope, and there's really kind of two reasons. One, like the sense of hopelessness and futility are like a requirement to get well in my experience. And two, I would be lying to folks. You know, I don't know, alcoholism really is a life destroyer. Like folks just, they just don't recover from it. So if I can help you get to that bottom, I'm certainly going to do it. Letting him ask you what needs to be done, that's awesome if you can get somebody to do that. It doesn't happen a lot because a lot of times people are exposed to AA and the 12 steps and they kind of have a clue. But you know you got someone's attention if they want to know how you got well. And it's not just me imposing it on you like, here's a solution, you're going to do it, like we've talked about several times. I do express the spiritual feature freely. I really could not have gotten well without the spiritual feature, so it's very hard for me to talk about recovery in that sense. But just like it says, you know, people can be very shy or sensitive when it comes to the spiritual stuff. So I always emphasize it doesn't have to be the God stuff. It really doesn't. And it's just this open-mindedness and a willingness to believe kind of in anything. You know, the 12 steps, the meetings of AA, whatever it is, if you're willing to believe in something, this can work for you. You don't have to go through and, like, figure out this great big grand conception of God that you've got to accept. I mean, I know for me that was kind of a mind blower. Like, I don't know. I don't even want to talk about how much that confuses me. But yeah, and I always try to use everyday language. I remember sitting in meetings early on, like in a meeting one day, and they're talking about, I don't even know what, like pride and amends and inventory and sponsorship. And I remember just like sitting there like, oh my God, will these people just talk English? What the heck are they talking about? It's like there's like this own secret like AA language that you have to learn. So I try to avoid that, especially like when I go into detoxes and things like that. You know, when I talk about an inventory, I'm not usually talking about a searching or a searching and fearless moral inventory. I'm telling you, I listed out all the things that made me angry and afraid in my sex conduct. You know, they'll learn the lingo later on. That's instantly understandable. When I talk about amends, I'm not using the word amends. I'm saying I had to go back and make those things right instead of running away from them. You know, people get that kind of stuff instantly. And thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Ron. You know, I... One of the things I was talking about the hopelessness of the disease. One of the things that I like to do with a newcomer too is to talk about all the ways that I tried to quit on my own. You know, how many full-fledged good old college tries I gave it to quit all by myself on Larry's willpower, and how they just failed utterly over and over and over again. And I'll even tell them, look, I was a slow learner. I just had to beat myself up really good before I walked in the door. You don't necessarily have to do that, but that's what I went through. And I find sometimes if I haven't gotten the attention of the newcomer yet, that'll get their attention, because usually they've tried to quit a couple of times before they've gotten here. I mean, who hasn't tried to control it just a little bit, you know, change of brand or environment and all the other things that we try, you know. And to me, that was for me... You know, I was young when I got here. I was 29 when I first walked into an AA room, and I didn't think I was going to die, but I was tired of feeling that pain, and I knew it was hopeless that I was ever going to get to a point where I could quit on my own, you know. But if I had some old-timer, you know, tell me, you're going to die of this thing, you know, I probably, you know, would have brushed that off. Now, today I take it much more seriously, and I realize that, you know, I can die of this thing. This thing will kill me. But I'm going to get real miserable emotionally and mentally before I get there. And that's the thing that really scares me. Again, turning back to the agnostic atheist thing, it's funny to me how many people I'm getting lately that ask for help that are like devout Christians and stuff, because that was not me when I got here. I was like, you know, I had this great college education and I had figured all that stuff out, and you know, okay, call it a higher power, call it God, it doesn't matter. You people are weak having to rely upon such a thing, you know. And I've learned, you know, that I don't need that kind of God talk in my life to be able to make sense of the world. And, of course, I can't make a 24-hour period without staying sober and holding down a job. And I'm lucky if I take a bath every 3 days, you know. And I'm talking about how I've got all these ideas in my head. I had a good sponsor early on that told me, you know, Larry, you can't be too dumb to get this thing, but you might be too smart, you know. And I didn't even know what the hell he meant by that. I thought he was paying me a compliment. Well, I am a smart guy. But, you know, I do try to comfort the newcomer who may really bristle with that antagonism that Bill talked about, you know, when spiritual things are mentioned. Especially when, you know, Bill talks about a higher power that was personal to me and of love. It just, Bill talks about getting, and I was that way. I remember I had someone 12-step me in here, and they handed me a big book, and they appealed to my ego and said, you're a reader, you like to read, read this. And I remember reading through it and getting to We Agnostics, and I thought, there's my chapter. And then I read it about being willing to believe, and the book did one of these numbers across the room, you know. And I remember telling the guy that I was talking to in the room that I began to trust. I said, I don't think this thing's for me, man. I just don't, I can't do the God thing. You know, and it was explained to me that I didn't have to put that label on it. And it didn't have to mean anything that God had meant or higher power had meant to me in the past. That it was about, just like Evie shared with Bill, about deciding what my own conception was. And it was suggested to me, and I still make the suggestion regularly, I don't know if everybody agrees with it, but that I can make AA itself my higher power, that was a good place to start. That, you know, there was a room full of people in here that had managed to stay sober one day at a time, much longer than I ever had up to that point. So they must have tapped into something that I haven't. And a lack of power is my dilemma. So if I can grasp onto you guys as a source of strength and power, then that was a good beginning for me. And of course, over time, eventually I've come to believe in something I call God. But I don't complicate it. And I share that with a newcomer. I said, when I first got here, I had to have all kinds of philosophical convictions, right? When I got here and know what this God thing was and explain it and define it. And that's not necessary for me today. And so I try to keep that simple in simple terms for a newcomer and say, hey, we're all inclusive here. Whatever your brand of religion or non-religion you may be, it's okay. It's okay. We'll love you. We'll be here for you. We'll support you. And so I think that's been the thing that's gotten me the most pay dirt. Thanks.
Thank you. We're going to continue on page 94, outline the program of action. Page 94. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions.
Yeah, outline the program of action. If someone's interested, we're always going to take a look at the steps. I kind of think it's important for you to know what you're signing up for. Otherwise, you might get down someone the road, and you didn't tell me about that. That's a little bit much for me. But I do. We always go over what we're going to do. I don't know. Somewhere in here talks about suggesting that someone read the entire book beforehand. I've only actually done that a couple of times, and it's usually people are bulking. You know, they don't want to do stuff. I'm like, well, why don't you read the AA book and see if it's for you and get back to me. But I try not to pressure folks. Once again, learn from experience from pressuring folks that it's probably not such a good idea, because I've discovered what happens is I can get people to do stuff for a little while. But at some point, it just completely falls apart. You really do have to have a desire to do this yourself. And I'll tell you that desire to be a part of this is what's kept me sober all these years, and kept me from quitting, to be honest, because I've hit some hard times in sobriety, and it's just my own personal commitment and choice to live this way that's kept me here. So it's important for them too, I think. And it's pretty common. Where was I? I was reading it. Blah, 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 blah. What does it say? Do not be offended if he doesn't want to know. Sorry. Oh, that if he doesn't want to see you again. I talk to a lot of newcomers, a whole lot of them. I don't even know how many I've talked to in the past, just in like 3 or so years. And the vast majority of them don't ever want to see me again. They don't. They'll nod and they'll smile. And sometimes I think I've reached through to them and I just never hear from them again. Or we'll make like a little appointment to meet, like call me again or I'm going to see you at this meeting. And just nothing comes from it. And that's perfectly fine. Maybe I have disturbed them about it, because a lot of times we'll get a little bit of relation in there where I can tell I got your attention, and that's good enough. Maybe he'll come back at a later date and talk to me or talk to somebody else. I don't really care. To be honest, I'm usually just grateful for the opportunity to do it. You know, it's an amazing experience. That's all I got.
Thanks, Laura. I was thinking about when Graham was reading the section about letting the person we're carrying the message to, let them know that they're actually helping us much more than we're helping them. I remember being told that early on, and I didn't get it. I relay a funny story to you. I got the privilege of taking an inmate through the 12 steps, and we were probably in the middle of him writing inventory, and we were talking. We always have some general conversation for the first 10 or 15 minutes, and he said, you know, I want to tell you how much I appreciate, you know, he goes, I know you live like 30 minutes from here, and sometimes it's raining, and you'd rather be at home with the girlfriend eating dinner, and he goes, but this is like, he says, man, I can't tell you, I look so forward to this hour and a half, 2 hours we spend together every week, this is my sanctuary. And I said, you want to hear something really sick? He said, what's that? I said, I feel the same way. I said, never in all my years would I thought that I would have told somebody I look forward to going into a jail cell and sitting with an inmate and reading this book and sharing my experience and being able to watch the lights come on for a guy who has gotten himself into a much far deeper bottom than I was ever in. And then the amazing thing, the true gift, is not because of anything special I'm doing, but because of this program and these steps have carried him and are beginning to carry him out of that bottom, has completely changed his attitude. And we have other local AA members like Mark and others that carry meetings into that jail. And they said, they'll come up to me, some of the other AA guys, and go, that guy Vic, man, he's changed. He's sharing good stuff in the meetings, and he's, man, look at that. And you're doing a good job with him. I said, wish I could take the credit for it, but it's AA's doing a good job with him. Because that's my job. I'm just carrying the message. I'm not the message. It's these 12 steps. And it's amazing to be just a part of that. So if a person cancels on me or says, I've got another guy doing that right now that's canceled appointment after appointment, you know. And I just think, gosh, I wish I could inject him with what I've gotten from this, but I know I can't. He's got to want it, and he's got to do it, more importantly, you know. And so I know it's not up to me. It's up to God. It's up to this program, and I just need to be a conduit and help carry the message to him. That's all I can do. And you know what? Maybe he's not meant to receive it from me. Maybe there's a person out there that he'll receive the message from in a better way, and I'm okay with that today. I don't think I'm the only sponsor on the street. There's plenty of other people out there that know it just as well as I do. So it's this thing has become a humbling experience. I guess what I'm trying to share is this thing's become such a humbling experience for me, and I am just grateful to be a part. I'll shut up now. I know I'm rambling.
Thank you. This is the last paragraph we're going to read tonight, and it's on page 96, and it starts, do not be discouraged, on page 96. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you have to offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance.
Yeah, I did get discouraged when my prospects did not respond. It's like so disappointing. Because I would get so exciting. Get so excited. Like, yes, I'm going to help this person. We're going to get sober. It's going to be wonderful, magical. And then they don't respond. And it's like, aw. And I'm just like, God, can I just help one person get sober? and I did. Once again, I done it all wrong. But I did. I spent a lot of time chasing people. You know, you can kind of get a while after get a feeling after a while that they're just kind of not feeling it. You've done all you can do at that point. But I'll, like, keep making those phone calls. Like, are you ready yet? Are you going to that meeting? Come on, just show up at the meeting. You know, and it is just kind of a it's a waste of time. And there was one gal, like, for a couple a really long time, I was trying to convince. And finally, I had to squarely look that in the face. Like, I'm not, I've said everything that I can tell you about alcoholism and the 12 steps, they just weren't buying it. And so finally, I had to do the hands-off approach, you know, and let it be. And crazy upon crazy things, a month later, she was back, and she was doing good, you know. So sometimes my continued attempts to, like, save people, because that's a big thing for me. I want to save you. Really just kind of prolong the problem. it does. It's kind of sad. That's why this, like, no pressure thing is, like, so awesome, because it's kind of like, here's the 12 steps. If you would like to do it, it's here for you. If you don't, that's cool too. I find a lot of times when working with somebody, like, they're kind of resistant, especially right when you hit inventory time. They're not too interested in that. And all of a sudden they get busy and they've got stuff to do. And then they call you up all, like, screwed up, like, blah, 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 life sucks so bad, blah, blah, blah. And I really don't, like, give them any kind of life advice or any of that jazz. I just remind them, oh, perhaps we should write this inventory. Remember us talking about that? And sometimes they bite and sometimes they don't. But usually, if I just let alcoholism work its little magical trick, they'll grasp onto this stuff. And it is kind of a waste of time, you know, to continue to work on those folks. There's people that come in here every day that I can be giving my time to. And not only that, friends and family, you know, that's become incredibly important. That's a huge gift that I actually have. Friends and family that want to talk to me and be a part of my life. And so it's silly for me to take time away from them for someone who's just clearly not interested in that. And you know what's really amazing, and I'm just going to say this, it has nothing to do with this paragraph because we're about to finish up. I've found really amazing about this stuff is I don't have to sponsor someone for this idea of working with others to work in my life. It's just the act of making an effort, taking the time to talk to someone, whether I sponsor them or not, like this magical miracle happens. You know, in the paragraph before, it talks about you might have made a friend. Some of my best friends I have met because I have started tried to 12-step them. You know, they didn't ask me to be their sponsor or whatever, but through that, we developed this incredibly close relationship, and it's amazing. You know, I cannot tell you the ways that working with others has shaped and changed my life for the better. It's not just that I got to stay sober. It's like I learned how to talk to people because I couldn't do that before. I learned how to have friends. I learned what it means not to be an arrogant little jerk, because I assure you that I was for quite some time. It is absolutely amazing. And to see them recover, that's really cool. That's where I get my hope today, actually, is seeing somebody else get better, not myself. I take my own sobriety for granted all the time. So.
Thanks, Ron. I'd love to say that my ego hasn't been involved in carrying the message, but boy, has it ever. I think there was a time when I would use it as a badge of honor. How many guys you sponsoring, Larry? Oh, I'm sponsoring this many guys, you know. So therefore, I was scared if I was going to lose one, you know. Uh-huh. There was some fear involved in that, right? I wasn't doing my job as a sponsor. I lost one of my sponsees, you know. And then I hate to say, I'd take sick pleasure when they'd get someone else to sponsor them and they'd still relapse again. I'd be like, all right, it wasn't me. I don't know if anybody can relate to that. I'm just being honest. today I try to be a little more humble, and again recognize that this isn't because I'm some grand, you know, person, or I've achieved some type of specialness in the program. It's this program is so powerful. The program is the miracle. The 12 steps are the miracle, and that's what makes it happen. And I'm grateful to be just a part of it, and to be able to share it. And if someone strays away for a while, I try to leave on good terms. There was times I haven't always done that, where I gotten frustrated with a sponsee or just someone I'm trying to help, and could get a little nasty with that person. And today I work hard not to do that, you know, because, hey, they may come back. They may return back and ask for help. And if they reach out for help, I want them to feel comfortable enough to come back to me. You know, so it's important, I think, that that I don't bring my personal ego and emotions, even though I will as an alcoholic, I don't bring my personal ego and emotions into this. This is about me being a benefit to my fellow man, to my fellow alcoholic, and most of all, to be of service to my higher power. And he's calling the shots. I'm not running the show anymore. So if a particular person doesn't stick with me and wanders away, well, then that just was what it was meant to be. I'm so grateful to be here tonight. This is awesome. I really have enjoyed what Ryan's had to share. Thanks.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, guys. That brings us to the end of the speaker part of the meeting. And we're going to pass these three baskets here. And this is for the seventh tradition, which states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the GSO remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. At this point, I'll ask, are there any AA, thank you, any AA-related announcements? Yes.
Hey, Joe, an alcoholic.
Hey, Joe.
Coming up this Sunday, my home group A101 community at Cafeteria Center Hospital is having a big anniversary brunch. Buster will be speaking. He'll be familiar. He's really a great guy, really a speaker. There will be a lot of bacon. I won't even plug that. There'll also be a myriad of other culinary curiosities. So please show up, bring something you'd like. Cheaper than movie, we'll feed you.
Thank you.
So if you have any new information, we've got the groovy, only non-chromatic flyer on the table right now. I'll brought to you those in, so please join us.
Thank you. That's this Sunday, 10 o'clock at Norfolk Hospital.
Yes,
is that right? Okay. Yes.
I'm Pat, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Pat.
January the 18th, my home group, Bayview Group at Talbot Baptist Church, is having a dessert. And we are having two speakers, and we're going to focus on a new way of living since we're starting off a new year. So it's going to be from 7 to 8:30. Please come, bring a dessert, and join us. We've got two really awesome, a male and a female speaker speaking.
That's great. Thank you. Yes.
Hi, I'm Katie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Katie. Katie.
Tomorrow night on New Year's Eve, we're going to be holding the Anonymity Ball, Virginia State Young People's Conference. And it is at St. Martin Methodist Church in Hampton, 99 East North Street Boulevard. There's going to be a meeting from 8:30 to 9:30, and then dance will be from 10 to 1. And please come. There's going to be desserts and coffee and lots of great fellowship, and it's really going to be an awesome opportunity to kind of spend a sober night
of
New Year's
Eve.
So, yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Yes.
Hey, Mark.
Mark. In Gloucester, if you want to travel that far, we're having a New Year's Eve party. It's going to be 17th. It's going to start at 6:30. Right? Sarah's going to dress up this
guy. Oh, no. No one will come.
We're going to have a speaker at 8 o'clock, and then we're going to be playing games and
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Any other announcements? I've got one here, but before I read this one, on New Year's Eve, you know, when I first got sober, that was in my mind at least, that was a big deal, not drinking on New Year's Eve.
Mm.
So there are places to go if you're new and you're worried about that, as I was when I was sober. I didn't know what to do with myself. They run these things called Alcathons. And I'm pretty sure that, so there's one in Hampton, there's one in Gloucester, there's probably one at the ocean front, the Easy Does It Club, the New Day Group, there's places you can go. So if you're frightened about that, talk to somebody after the meeting. If you don't want to do that, get a meeting list. There's a phone number for Intergroup on there. You could call them up. They'll tell you what's available. You don't have to sit on your own this New Year's Eve thinking about drinking. There's going to be sober people having fun. You can sit with them and think about drinking. So, anyway, if you make it through the new year and you're still interested in AA, we've got a wonderful event. It's in here on the 13th of January, so it's 2 weeks tonight in this room. And it's a little different. It starts at 6 o'clock. We're having a potluck eating session at 6 o'clock, so bring a dish if you want, you don't have to. And at 7 o'clock, we have a great speaker, a guy called Jerry Weaver. He's coming from Virginia, and he's going to come down and speak. And as I said last week, apparently he's very pleasing on the eyes. So, you know, that's the rumor. That's what I've heard. So, yeah, please. Please enjoy.
Come check him out if you don't want to hear the message, right? Just come check him out.
And we also have a bunch of flyers. We need too many flyers, so please take them. They're on the table there. They're green. Any other announcements at this point? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Okay. Newcomers, is there anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like to welcome you. Okay. Literature is available. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting, and it's on that table right there. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. And so what we're doing is, if you're interested in asking about sponsorship or you want to get a sponsor tonight, Jill and David will be down at the front table right here at the end. Just come on down and talk to them if you're interested in asking about sponsorship. So I'll thank Larry again for coming all the way from Gloucester and Ryan for sharing with us tonight. And after we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at the Mexican restaurant on Colonial and 22nd Street. You're very welcome to come along. We had the Christmas party there last week. It was fantastic. So please don't go home. Come to the restaurant and have the meeting after the meeting. And finally, somebody's going to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. Oh, I think he's beating you, John.
Oh, is he? Is John? No. Here, I got it. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you could do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your own relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the happy road of destiny, or the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Thanks. And for those that care to join us, we're going to form a circle and see the Lord's Prayer. Thank you. How are you doing, Steve?
Hey,
I'm doing all right.
Our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen.
Thanks. All right. Ryan, that was great. You did a great job tonight. Thank you. It was wonderful.
This guy, he's a good one.
Yeah.